Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 868, which is actually, I think, the third episode of Talking with Chris Hardwick, the Sunday night chat show on AMC that I'm hosting now. It's 11 p.m., 10 Central, and I hope you like it. The TV show is really just kind of a video version of the podcast, but beefed up a bit. It's a little more structured, so but it's been super fun to do. Amazing guests coming up. The cast of Orange is the New Black is coming up. Bryan Cranston, James Corden, Charlie Hunnam. Neil deGrasse Tyson, Jordan Peele, Connie Britton. And this episode is Michelle Monaghan. It was on last week. She was on last week. A pal of mine, I adore her. She was so super cool to come on and just give an incredible chat. Michelle Monaghan has been in a million things that you love. And also, she's on The Path right now on Hulu, of which she is also an executive producer. So really, really, really super cool chat with Michelle. The Nerdist Podcast number 868, Talking with Chris Hardwick, episode number 3, Michelle Monaghan. Katie, please start the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
On the Twitters and the Instagrams and the Facebooks using @talking. I'm going to read questions, comments, comments. We're going to have video messages. We're going to have people in the audience ask questions. I'm going to give them prizes that we've concocted to craft around our very incredible guest today, who happens to be Michelle Monaghan. Here she is. Let's just get into the... You know, it's amazing. Your IMDb page is extensive.
Yes.
You have been in a lot of stuff, but I want to start with The Path because that's what people are watching this now. The Path is on Hulu. So I want to launch in with a couple of Path questions, if that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay, first of all, some reactions. James Bates 11 on Twitter says, is there anything better than seeing Michelle Monaghan scoffing bacon? hashtag, is there anything better than that?
No, there is nothing better than scoffing bacon.
Are you spinning it into
I did spit it after a while because we did several takes. We did, and I love bacon, and that bacon in particular was really, really good. But after about 6 or 7, you know, because I go down the line, I just kind of really stuff it in like a freak. And then after a while, I did sort of start to put it in a spit bucket, which is so disgusting.
You're hoping that they're not doing a lot. Let's see if she'll do it again.
We got to get
that one more time.
Exactly.
Hammer it in. Get that one
exactly,
shot.
Exactly.
Well, you're a producer on the show.
I am. Yeah.
So
thank you.
How did, you know, to see a show of this quality, it's really forging ahead and changing what it means to do digital content.
Yes.
Because Hulu, for the longest time, was just like, oh, you watch everyone else's show, and they started making original programming. Mm-hmm. So just how did you get involved with Hulu? How did you get involved with this project? Mm-hmm. And
well, you know, it was really interesting. After True Detective, I really enjoyed that space, you know, kind of working in the cable market. I liked the material that was coming out of that world. It was sort of edgy and a little bit dark, and I was looking for something along those lines, and Jessica Goldberg, our creator, had sold the show to Hulu, and I was at the top of her wish list for it, and that was incredibly flattering. She sent it to me, and it was the first thing that I had read since True Detective that I felt like I could really delve into in terms of creatively, mm-hmm. into a world that I felt like could live for a couple of seasons, you know, and it's been so great working with Hulu. They kind of just let us do our thing. You know, they've hired the people that they entrust, the actors, the creative team, the writers, the directors. And then we go shoot this show, and it feels like making kind of like a really long movie.
Right.
And also the material kind of feels a little bit edgy. For those of you who have seen the show, it's a little dark here and there. And so it kind of feels like independent filmmaking in a lot of ways, because we don't have like a lot of suits there.
Right.
But yet people, it has distribution and marketing and money behind it. So people are actually seeing it in the end, which is really gratifying.
Because you've been able to do so many different types of things.
Yes.
And what was your first credit? Like if you're someone scrolling down, you're like, what was the first job?
I think the first job was this movie called Unfaithful. With Diane Lane
and
Richard Gere.
Yes. That was an Adrian Lyne movie.
That was an Adrian Lyne movie. Yeah, and I ultimately got cut out of most of the film. I was only in a few scenes, but that experience really kind of changed my life. It really, really cemented the idea that I thought, okay, you know what? I'm really meant to do this. I'm going to really pursue this and work hard, and that was really the start of it. And then Kiss Kiss Bang Bang kind of came shortly thereafter, within the next year or two, and that's when really I kind of was able to hit the ground.
I loved that movie. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, if you guys haven't seen it, it was Shane Black. Shane Black wrote and directed it. Shane Black wrote a lot of really big, flashy, hilarious comedy.
Lethal Weapons. Like, my favorite movies growing up.
The Last Boy Scout was Shane Black. And so he came back in 2005 and wrote and directed this incredible movie that felt very intimate.
Yeah.
But it's Michelle and Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer.
Yes.
And it is legitimately, I said in the opening, one of the best comedies in the past 20 years.
Yes, thank you. I agree. I think it holds up. You know, it was really, it's very kind of film noir. It's a comedy. And we shot it at night for 45 nights straight. And it was one of my very first opportunities as an actress, you know, and they really took me under their wing, and you know, I improvised for the first time with Downey. I had no idea what we were doing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I need to go back a little bit there. So what are they? So you're on. So they plop you onto this. You're with like some of the biggest names in Hollywood, Shane Black and Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr.
Yes,
and they just say, okay, here's the scene.
And it's kind of crazy because you know Shane's writing is so great. Like you really don't need to add your own words, but Robert had this bright idea one day as we were kind of sitting, you know, about to go into this hotel room for this scene. It was like day two or three, and he said, "All right, we're gonna improv this next one." And I was like, "What?" I was so green, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And he said, "We're gonna improv," and I said, "I don't know what that means." And meanwhile, they're rolling, and then I said, "Okay, well, what is that? What is that?" And he goes, "It means we're not going to say the words that Shane wrote." Like that. Like, exactly. Like,
did
so
Shane know this was going to happen?
Well, he's in the other room, and I know he can hear us on our mics now in hindsight, you know. But all of a sudden, they yell action, and he, like, throws me a pack of gum. And my heart is beating a mile a minute. I'm freaking out. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this gum? Do you know what I mean? And he's like, just give me a piece of gum. And I'm fumbling. We're supposed to be a little bit drunk. And we do the scene. We go on for about 2 minutes. And it actually played really well. Of course, I don't think we used any of it in the end. But it was really fun. And I learned how to improv with Robert Downey Jr.
But I would imagine that something like that, it's almost not even necessarily for being able to use it, but just creating a level of comfort.
It totally does, you know, and I think it's that trust that you have when you're able to sort of kind of go back and forth and kind of hold your own. And Robert probably at that point in the film probably wanted to sort of test my boundaries and see where he could go creatively with me and push me. And he was just such a great scene partner. We had a really great time working together.
So how did you mash it down? I don't know if you guys know this, but Michelle's from Iowa. Nowhere near the entertainment business in Iowa. Is your family, were they farmers? Did we talk about this in the podcast?
Yeah. So I grew up in a town of 700 people called Winthrop in northeastern Iowa, really, really small town. And yeah, my dad farmed corn, beans, helped my grandpa, and also worked in a factory for 40 years. And, you know, when I graduated high school, it was my dream to, you know, study journalism. So I moved to Chicago to study journalism, and in order to put myself through school, I modeled. I did all those, like, Montgomery Ward ads, those Target ads, like the Chicago Tribune. I mean, I was that, I was really that girl. I'd be like, Mom, I'm going to be in the Sunday paper, you know, this week, you know, and...
Do you remember any of the Montgomery Ward poses?
Oh, of course.
Because there's, okay. there's always like a you're late for something.
Oh, no, like that, like the very like inquisitive, and then you're like.
I was like the one where the guy's kind of looking, and she's having a moment, and the guy's looking very. I never figure out what's happening.
Yes.
What are those people doing?
I have no idea. Like,
what sort of function?
No, you're sitting there going, you're so embarrassed, you know, because you're just making such a fool out of yourself. But you know what? It paid my college tuition.
What was the worst one?
Oh my gosh. So I really do have a terrible one. I used to go to Japan. I used to model in Japan on my semesters off, and I would go there on contract, and I would really do unglamorous modeling for like 2 months. And when I say unglamorous, they would be, you know, ads for uniforms. So I'd do janitorial uniforms, and nurses' uniforms, and doctors' uniforms, and they were really lame, but whatever. Again, it paid the bills. But I did have one job over in Japan where I was doing a Sony ad for their new Walkman, you know, mm-hmm. back in the day, CD Walkman. And I was working with a spider monkey named Dodo-chan.
Oh, no.
And we're shooting this ad, and I like animals. I'm cool with animals. I'm down with animals. But they thought at one point, they're like, you know, let's put Dodo-chan on the top of your head, and that'll be really, really cute and really funny and really sweet. And I'm thinking, okay, that's cool. You know, I'm very naive at that point. And he's kind of moving around, and he's getting a little squirrely. And they say, okay, well, Dodo-chan needs to take a break. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, of course.
I'm like, Dodo-chan.
Take a break for the monkey.
Right. So they gave him a break, and he proceeds to, like, run up on top of the counter and then on top of the fridge where he finds this big bowl of fresh fruit. And a lot of it's been kind of cut open and halved open. And he proceeded to eat, like, 3 passion fruit and, like, some other fruit that was sitting up there. And then finally he kind of settled down, and it was about 15 minutes later, and they think, okay, he's ready to go back to work. Okay. That's great. That's awesome.
The monkey's calling you. So, what the fuck is this? There's only 3 passion fruits?
Exactly.
Trying to peel this shit with my feet?
Exactly. So they're like, great, let's put him back on top of your head. So I'm like, okay, great. And we're shooting for about 5-10 minutes, and all of a sudden, I feel something very warm. It was like somebody cracked an egg on top of your head.
No, number one or number 2?
Right? Yeah, number 2.
No! Yes. No!
And I was like, I think he pooped on my head. They're like, Nani? Nani?
Oh, no.
What? And I mean, and then they came over with paper towel, and they're wiping it down. But they still hadn't gotten the shot.
Oh.
And I'm so professional and so way too kind at this point. So they clean it, and then they just put Dodo-chan back up on my... and then he gets... And now he's got a sugar high. He's like my 3-year-old. Right? And now he's crazy. Now he starts, like, biting and all
but
of
at
this.
But at this point, you and Dodo-chan are not... on good terms
at all. No, we're not friends. And
not
so
at
they
all.
Ultimately get the shot.
Friends
and
don't
I'm like,
diarrhea on each other's heads.
No. And I was thinking, wow, that was a really shitty job. And then,
points.
I didn't even mean
that. I give
that.
You points for that.
I'm just good like that.
That's good.
And then the following year, I go back to like fulfill a contract, make some more money, and I'm riding on the subway, and all of a sudden I look up and I see the ad. The actual ad, it's a year later, and Dodo-chan is on my head, and I'm like this. And I felt like I froze. I felt like I had PTSD.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Well, listen, like, I think you're lucky that all that other footage didn't go to some fetish site.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they're going to say, cut 2 years later, it's 2005, yeah. We're shooting Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
I'm improvising a scene with Robert Downey Jr. He eats an entire bowl of fruit.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
gets on my head.
Oh, my God.
I mean, what does that prepare you for?
You know what? We did have that spider scene in the movie. I don't know if you remember when there was a spider scene crawling across my breast. And I remember I was really okay. Again, I was okay with the spider and everything. And Downey was so freaked out. He had to keep, like, touching it to, like, make it move or whatever.
Iron Man hates spiders?
Yeah. Oh, he was freaked out. And he was like, how are you doing this right now? And I'm like, it's fine. And basically, I had my eyes closed. I could just feel it kind of going across. But that did make me think of that scene. And
I mean, I guess if you work on a farm and then once a monkey shits on your head, like,
you're good.
Cool,
you're golden,
at that
man.
Point.
You're golden, yeah.
Did you work on the farm?
Yeah, I did chores growing up. I mean, those were my first jobs, picking up rock. And, you know, detasseling. I mean, have any of you guys done any of this? Picking up rock, walking beans, all of these things that you do in the summer.
Now, these are physical skills. These people are like graphic designers.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have the... You're talking about skills that would help in an apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of the people here,
exactly.
including me, do not have those types of survival skills.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I look back at those years, and I made $5 an hour, but that was more money than I'd ever made. And you would work with a lot of, like, boys and girls from, like, various counties would all come, and so you would meet... Like the boys that you would meet a few years later, like cruising in the local town.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember you a few years back.
Right.
When we were like walking rows together. And
so how did you get, I mean, this is going to sound, I don't mean this to sound negative, but how did you get out? Because small towns are very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from the South. Small towns are very difficult to get out of.
You're absolutely right. I think I had a real interest in journalism growing up. As I said, I went to college and I studied journalism. But I actually just had a very a real curiosity about the outside world, and I remember I never felt sort of confined by my parents. My parents were always like, "You can do anything you want to do; just follow your heart." And I remember we went to see a Cubs game in Chicago because it was the nearest biggest city when I was about 14 or 15, and it was the first time that I really saw a proper city. And I thought, holy shit, like, this is amazing. Oh, my gosh, this is incredible. And I felt like this is where I wanted to be. And, you know, I knew if I wanted to go to Chicago and go to college there, I would have to, you know, work hard to put myself through school. And fortunately, I was able to model and do that there. And once I experienced Chicago, then I thought, oh, my gosh, now I want to go to New York. And that's when I dropped out of school when I was a senior in college and moved to New York and continued modeling there and fell in love with the city and started doing commercials. And then one thing led to another and started my acting career there.
Well, you know, because you're such a... Oh.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
The thing that I love about watching you as an actor is that you're so... You're so seamless. Like, you're so... Like, sometimes you can see people... I don't know if you play this game. Yeah. Sometimes my wife and I are watching a movie or a television show, and there's, like, one particular scene goes on. We'll go, audition scene. Like, you can always tell, like, what audition scenes are.
Yeah.
But you're so seamless in your roles. And so it's interesting to hear that, you know, you had this farm background and you wanted to do journalism and you were modeling because you're such a natural actor.
Thank you.
Did you ever feel that when you were growing up?
Do you know what? It's such a good question. I've done a lot of reflecting on it because I've always said no. And then, you know, I remember being now when I really think about it, you know, I remember being in the bathroom and I would make myself cry. I would think of something horrible. Or I remember now, like, using my imagination. And I also remember being in high school, and I was not an athletic person. I wasn't coordinated, although I was the greatest fan in the stands. But I wasn't comfortable playing sports. And my brothers did. I had older brothers, and they did, you know, drama. And I remember deciding to do a play, and I remember going out on stage. I was dying, was freaking out so much. And then I remember going on stage, and then all of a sudden I remember it was over. And I've never forgotten that feeling. And I think that feeling, that sense of abandon, like just losing yourself and having that abandon, just that creative abandon just has really fueled me. And I think I've always remembered that, you know, that's kind of subconsciously kind of fueled me into my career. And I think, you know, now it's obvious that I was like, this was what I was meant to do. But growing up, I think I fought it. I was like, had to do something a lot more practical. I think when you grow up in a town of 700 people, I didn't grow up near a movie theater. It was an hour away. Like, you don't look at the, you know, I don't think of, like, that's, like, not a feasible dream. Like,
right.
That's not even come into play, you know, until I realized that, you know, potentially it was feasible.
But I think it also helps just from what I feel like I know about you is, you know, coming from this really nice small town with a nice family.
Yeah.
You seem really grounded. Like, you seem okay with all of the stuff that's happening. Because you legitimately, if someone didn't know what you did, I don't think they would go, oh, you're one of the most famous actresses in the world. Because you're so approachable and comfortable. Yeah. And what do you attribute that to?
Honestly, to my family. I mean, they're so down to earth. My parents, I had very humble, easygoing, fun, you know, growing up. And again, you know, my parents instilled a lot of faith in me from a young age that, you know, allowed me to go to Japan at 17 or 18. And then, you know, when I decided to move to New York, said, are you dropping out of school? Are you sure? And I said, yeah, something's telling me something's going to happen for me in New York. And they were like, well, we've always told you to follow your heart, and, you know, drove me there in a U-Haul. And I think there's that sense of real gratitude that I have for them. And, you know, if I ever wasn't grounded, I'd have to answer to them first, and that would not be pretty. So.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that is the other thing is when you're from a small town, people don't let you get away with shit.
No, no.
And if you start acting, they'll go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, like even my character is pretty dark on the path, and I was just away on vacation with my parents this last week, and I asked them, like, how are you enjoying the show? I thought I'd get some feedback. Mom said, you know, I really like the show, but Michelle Lynn, I really don't like what you're doing. And I was like, she broke out the middle name. And she's like, I really don't like you on the show. And I was like, and she was serious, you know? And I was like, well, that means, am I doing a good job? And she's like, well, I don't know. You'll have to be the judge of that.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Yeah, moms get real serious. They can get real serious.
Yeah.
I think I'm not an actor at heart. I love hosting. I'm a comedian. I love talking to people. But when I'm watching a movie or a television show, there's so many things I feel like, I couldn't do that. Like, I could never comfortably do a love scene, ever.
Yeah.
It feels to me like it. How do you?
It's such a level
because you. It has to seem intimate, but at the same time, there's like a sweaty grip with a microphone.
It's true.
And you've had to do a handful of them. So how do you?
A handful. Oh my God.
Why is it?
You're being polite.
Okay, I was being polite. Yeah.
My husband would say like 24.
He'd be like, the number's 23.
Yeah. You know.
Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. You know what? It is so unnerving. You know. I think. You obviously speak to your co-star, and hopefully you've had the opportunity to get to know each other for a bit of time, so you're not sort of delving into the sheets straight away. And so you kind of feel slightly comfortable. And then you kind of, I guess you just sort of ease into it. There's a lot, on my part, there's a lot of laughter involved. Like,
right.
That's just to break the ice. But honestly, you know, the first time, one of the first scenes was with Tom Cruise, actually, in MI3.
Right.
My husband and I had just gotten married, and literally like 3 days before, and we weren't able to take our honeymoon because I had to start shooting right away. So
your honeymoon was with Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Basically, this is exactly what it was. You know, it was the first day before. You know, it was the night before shooting, and I said, oh, my gosh, honey. I said, you have to be intimate with Tom Cruise tomorrow. I'm so nervous. What am I going to do? And he said, honey, he's a total pro. Just follow his lead. It'll be fine. You know, I go to work. I'm so nervous. Everything goes great. It's perfect, right? It's fine. I come back. Pete's like, my husband, Pete. He said, how did it go? I said, it was amazing. He goes, go brush your teeth. Come back. Tell me. Right? I said, Tom was such a gentleman. He was so nice. It was great. Everybody's so great. JJ's so nice, the director. And my husband looked at me and he hugged me and he was like, how cool is it that you are making out with Tom Cruise on our honeymoon?
That's amazing. So he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. And that right then and there, I was like, I'd already known that I'd married the right guy, but you know, that's the way we look at it.
What does Pete do?
He's a graphic designer.
Oh, yeah.
He's like one of these people.
He's one of these people. You would have to save his ass so hard in an apocalypse
exactly.
with your farming skills.
That's exactly right.
And he's a graphic designer. Does he help a lot of branding?
Yes, but and what's so great, you know, we've been together for 17 years.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. And it does help, I think, because, you know, he's still creative and I'm creative. So we have a mutual respect for the creative process. But I'm so impressed with what he can do and what he can build and what he does on the computer. I'm not like that at all. So he really impresses me with his talent and what he does. And I, in turn, like he loves what I do. And so we have a mutual respect for each other and also very a respectful and understanding of the process that we go through.
I guess you would have to be if you're going to be married for 17 years.
Yeah.
What is the key as someone who's been married for about 8 months?
Yeah.
How do you keep it fresh?
We laugh all the time. He's really one of the funniest people that I know, and I personally think like the best quality in any human being, man or female, is a sense of humor, a great sense of humor, and it really is, you know. You know, if you can just laugh through any situation, whatever it is, and just remember like what a gift it is to, you know, to have found each other. And you know, he's my best friend. He's an amazing, amazing man.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, he is. What can I say? It's true.
It's so funny, people clapping. What if you're like, I really think the best quality of a person is to be mean and really serious and not listen to another person?
Yeah, but I also think it's so great. You know, we have two young children, and I just think, you know, it's such a great example for them is to have parents to see them sort of joke around. And as a result, I see our children now kind of adopting this funny little sense of humor. And it's nice to see that kind of quality, you know, projected onto them, and they're sort of picking up on that. And it makes for a fun, light household, and that doesn't mean that I don't get stern and, you know, sort of yell.
I know, but you have smiley eyes,
yeah.
It just looks like you smile.
Yeah.
Like your face, you know, I think it was, my mother-in-law said this, but I think it was an Oscar Wilde quote, but she said, at 20, you get the face you were born with, at 50, you get the face you deserve.
Oh,
and it's such a great quote.
That's an amazing
quote. It's like, yeah, if you're
quote.
A stern, like if you're just a cranky, you know, your face just kind of gets like this,
yes.
and then you just look like great. But it really looks like, oh, Michelle's happy and she smiles a lot. And that's a great quality,
thank you, man.
Especially in this business.
Thank you.
Which does not aim to generate a lot of smiles for the people who are in it.
That's true. It's true. You know what? I think it's important to, you know, I think in life, you know, to take your job very seriously, you know, to be professional. But I don't take life too seriously. And
good.
I think that's a really great balance to maintain in life.
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, it's such a transient in the sense of, like, you know, you form a little family that's very intimate and you're having love scenes with people and other people are in the director and it's intimate. And then you leave and go do it again with a whole new group of
and
people.
And also I've learned, too, I've been around long enough. Yeah, I really get around. But I mean, but there's also a real natural ebb and flow, I find, in anyone's career, whatever you do. And I've been fortunate enough to be around long enough to know that now what goes up will come down. And so it really forces me to have that gratitude when things are really great, and then to understand that things, you know, this too shall pass, you know, if things aren't going so great, just to continue to work and to persevere. And I think that's a really important thing to remember.
I mean, and True Detective was one of those gems.
Yes.
That you, I mean, I'm sure when you go onto a project like that, do you feel like, oh, I think this is something special that's happening? Or do you just kind of get through it and then if it works, it works?
No, that one for sure, I definitely knew. I mean, you could feel it in the room, and that the intensity and the creativity and the commitment that everybody was bringing to it. And I don't mean just by with the directors, with Carrie, our director, or, you know, the boys, Matthew and Woody, and the writer, I mean, just the production designer and the cinematographer, and you would just see what these people were doing every single day on the set, and it was extraordinary. And I remember even getting 3 pages into the first script, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is extraordinary writing. This is really special. And, you know, after sort of sitting down with Carrie and speaking about the role and seeing the arc of her, I knew it was something that I really wanted to be a part of, and I'm so happy that I was, because I'm very, very proud of it.
The show was amazing. I mean, yeah. It was one of those, like, because I think I kind of thought it was going to be some, like, weird supernatural thing was brewing, but it just sort of had that, it just kind of had that real juicy...
It was, and it was haunting. And the music, how good was the music?
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible.
But I still... It's so, you know, but it's funny how I just like your mom, gets mad at characters, and I'm like, the fuck is Woody Harrelson's... He's been cheating on her. He cheats on her every time, and then he's mad when she does it to get back at him. How is that fair?
Yeah, you know? It's like, exactly.
But I think there are dudes who are like that, are like, no.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
For a guy, it's just like... this.
Then you crossed a line, exactly.
Like, you've been cheating on her for two decades.
Don't mow my lawn.
Yeah. I mean, and that show... How do they, because it spans such a long period of time.
Yes.
How do they age everyone?
Well, we shot a lot in sequence, with the exception of the scenes where the interrogation scenes.
Right.
So those were amazing scenes, but we actually shot pretty much in sequence. So I got the prosthetics, and you know, they aged me to be, I guess, like 55, in my 60s at some point. But I was actually 5 months pregnant when I finished that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I think they thought I was method, because every time I went away, I'd come back and I was supposed to be a little bit older. And I would come back like 5, 6, 7 pounds heavier. And I never told anyone. And they were like, wow, this is really impressive. It's natural. Like, the older that you get, you put on weight, right? And then finally, like, I had to go up, like, pant sizes and bigger shirts. And finally, at the end, you know, I said to Woody and everybody on my last day, and I said, I'm 5 months pregnant, you know, almost 6 months pregnant. They were like, what? That's crazy.
Now, what was the reason for not telling anyone?
Well, I just didn't want anyone to sort of focus on that. You know, I didn't want anybody sort of worrying about me. I was totally fine. I was having a really easy pregnancy, and I wanted to focus on the work, and but there was actually a scene. It was one of the latter scenes where I'm seeing Woody for the first time, and we're having an argument, and I felt and I was it was on my close up of all things, and I felt my baby kick for the first time.
Oh, no.
For the first time in the middle of the scene, and I remember like stopping, and then I never watch playback on my scenes. Like, I never go back to Video Village and look at what we did, but I actually did for that time, because I felt like my pupils dilate, and I'm like, I want to really see if that happened, you know? So I said, do you guys mind? Can I watch playback from that one? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. So I watched it, and sure enough, like, in that moment, my eyes...
Did you get the footage from that?
No, I didn't, and I know, I just remembered it now.
You need to have that so you can show your kid this.
Yeah,
first time.
It's crazy that was caught on camera, actually, but that just dawned on me now. Again,
that's so, and it actually is, it's not surprising to me at all to hear you say that, because I feel like there are so many people who would be like, well, I'm pregnant, so I need 4 assistants, and I need this, I need a jar of pickles dipped in peanut butter at regular intervals. But, you know, the fact that you could keep this to yourself and go act in this thing and you're in New Orleans, and it's like, so what did it feel like to be pregnant in New Orleans working with these people?
Really boring. I remember one night, Woody was so sweet. And I would have taken him up on the offer at any time, but he was like, you know, we're gonna go play poker tonight with Willie. And I'm like, Willie? He's like, Nelson. And
I was like,
really? And he was like, yeah, why don't you come along? And I all I wanted to do was just go and but I knew, I was like, you can't go and play poker with Willie Nelson and the boys.
I'll be like a marijuana rainforest.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I got to pass. I got an early start in the morning, you know? And it was so funny, because I was like, I can't believe I missed out on that. And then the next day I said, well, how did it go? How was the game? How's the card game? And he was like, oh God. He's like, I beat Willie. He got all pissed off and took off in a huff. And I said, oh, I can't believe I missed that. Damn.
I mean, as much of a huff as a man who smoked pot
his whole life. Exactly.
Gone Baby Gone was Ben Affleck's directorial debut. Was he nervous with that? Like, what was his approach?
He seemed, you know, he seemed really confident at that. I mean, this was the first time that he had directed anything, and I remember him being really adept at with every department, like really having a clear vision for the story. I mean, that was probably one of the more intense movies that I've ever shot. We shot in some really dark places in Boston, and the material itself was very hardcore, and it was, yeah, that was it's a powerful movie. You know, that movie has stuck with me, and it really is fascinating to me as well, that people come up to me all the time and talk to me about that ending. You know, should have they left the little girl with, you know, the family, or, you know, was it right for them to take the little girl away? And
spoiler!
No, I'm kidding. Oh, no! At this point, no,
seriously, at this point, if you haven't seen it, go
fuck
yourself.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
like, that's
exactly,
your fault.
Exactly.
That's your fault.
So it's proved to be a very provocative film, and it's really, you know, people still talk about it in a really profound way. And so I really, that movie was a really intense project for me. That stuck with me for a long time, that project.
How do you know if, and you had to do the Boston accent, too.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do it for that because I was supposed to, because Angie Gennaro is from, but I think ultimately, you know, Ben came to me and I had been working on it, and he said, you know, as a Bostonian, there's nothing worse than someone not getting it right. So he said, let's just pretend that you moved from like Connecticut to Boston when you were in junior high, and so you never got the Boston accent.
Right.
He said, whatever makes you happy. But I can do the Boston accent. I just did it in a movie, in Patriots Day, which was great. But Gone Baby Gone is awesome.
I want to talk. I'm going to do James Lipton now. I would like to talk to Boston Michelle.
Yeah, exactly.
If I may.
Exactly.
What's the main? Is it just?
You're.
Because I hear a lot of people like.
You. God. Oh God. How do I do the accent?
I do hear a lot of people do like the ahs.
You got to drop the ah.
You drop the ah bit.
You drop the ah bit. Talk for a while, and you know that's the way it goes.
But I did hear I was performing in Boston. I went to the airport and I heard like a transit cop, and I think a lot of people do the ah have it Boston.
But you go through the whole thing.
But he did one that was so specific, like, no, that's a Boston accent. We go, oh, well, where's American Airlines? He goes, oh, you're flying nonstop. And like, nonstop. There was
almost a
little bit of a lisp to it.
But it's stop. Yeah, it's really amazing because, you know, they have dialects within the actual, you know, accent. So there's, you know, the Southie, and if you're from another part of Boston, I mean,
then they'll beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, precisely. You don't want to mess it up.
It's very tribal.
Yeah.
It's very tribal in Boston.
Yeah, totally.
But when you're on a project and you're in it, how do you know? I always wonder, how does an actor know that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing? How do you know? Because I wonder if it's not supposed to really feel like anything, really, if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Because if it does, are you too aware of it? How do you know?
That's a really good question. I mean, it is really a gut feeling that you get. And one of the things that I think I thrive in creatively is when I do a project really quickly. So I love doing independent films like Trucker or Fort Bliss. I don't know if anybody's seen those, but those are movies that are shot in 19, 20, 21 days. And when you're working at that pace, you're literally living, eating, and breathing it. You're sleeping about it. You're dreaming about it. And you really are in the zone when you get to work that fast and you get to be in every single scene. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I'll have done my homework before the film has even started, that I'll have done my preparation, whether it's learning how to drive a truck or being a medic or whatever it is. That by the time we start and done my research, talked with people, that by the time we start, it's in my blood. And usually by the end of the first week, you know, I feel pretty confident. Like I can't say that I feel pretty confident, but I'll get a feeling that it's like
I'm
connected to it.
Right.
I'm connected to it. And if I'm not connected to it, I feel I'm very vocal about it to the director, the writer, and, you know, we try to find a way. You know, a lot of people don't know you shoot movies out of sequence. So, you know, you shoot the ends. You know, sometimes that can be your very first day, you shoot the end. So you have to be in, it before you even start to understand the arc and everything before you actually get going. So,
and I'm also curious to know about the, you know, especially working in a business that is historically less kind to women in the business.
Mm, yeah.
does it affect the types of roles that you take, or do you see like, oh, I want to make sure, and you know, I want to take roles that are sort of a role model for young female actors, or what? How does that?
You know, for sure. I mean, I've seen how my feelings on it have my interests in roles. What I'm interested in has changed as I become more of a woman. Is because as I become a mother, you know, I'm really. I think I've really, and I've thought about it a lot too, and I really now respond to roles that are kind of working class, and I think that that kind of maybe comes from my upbringing. I'm kind of come from a blue collar family, and you know, I like to play a truck driver. I played a factory worker in North Country, truck driver and trucker, you know, a medic, an army medic in Fort Bliss, and those roles have been the most profound for me, and I feel like those are roles that I've had the opportunity to kind of lend a voice to the voiceless in a lot of ways.
Right.
And I think that's really important for me personally is to, you know, I think there's a way that you can entertain people and also enlighten people along the way. And, it, you know, that's not to say I don't like to do like a good old romantic comedy every now and then, but the things that really kind of touch me and move me are things where I'm enlightened along the way. When I learn something, when I get to go spend time with veterans and I start to realize that there is a disconnect between people in uniform and civilians like me.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have an opportunity to bridge that gap and you know, you can enlighten people along the way and make them feel something. I feel like that's really where I want to continue to go down.
And how is the business getting better and how is it getting worse?
Well, I love that people are talking about it now because I think that there's nothing better than having everything out in the universe and saying, like, these are the issues that are affecting us. I think it's really important as women, you know, to not sit back and really just talk about it, but to be proactive about it. And, you know, to really, you know, nurture working with other females. You know, there are so many writers, great female writers and directors that I've worked with along the way that now, you know, we're working together at developing new things. And, you know, and that's just also to have other crew members on the set. Like, I've rarely worked with, like, a female cinematographer. You know, they're non-existent, you know. But really encouraging that from, like, a young age and mentoring people who want to be in the industry.
And I guess now that you're producing,
yeah.
You have a lot of control
yeah,
over
that. Yeah, it's like, you know, you have the ability to collaborate. So you want to make the most of it.
That's great.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break. When we come back, audience members are going to get up and ask their questions.
Cool.
Because I have been hogging the stage way too much. We want to hear from you guys at home. If you want to be a part of the show, we're at Talking on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You'll find exclusive updates about our upcoming guests. And you can ask any questions you have, because, again, this is all, you're part of this. You are a central part of this, and I hope you feel that way. More with Michelle Monaghan when we come back on Talking with Chris Hardwick. Welcome back to Talking with Chris Hardwick. I'm talking with Michelle Monaghan. This is just some random questions from the internet.
Yeah.
Grace.r.l on Instagram says, describe Aaron Paul in 3 words.
Oh, gosh. He is a prankster, which I've come to know.
Okay, prankster.
Enthusiastic. I've never met anyone more enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And committed.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, very committed.
Those were 3 very, what kind of pranks? What does he do?
Well, he learned them from Bryan Cranston, apparently.
Of course.
And then he's now brought them to our set. It's like payback is like, now it's like,
who put this meth in my tea?
Exactly.
Not funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Not funny, Aaron.
Yeah. So, yeah, he'll do little, I mean, he's gotten some big ones, you know, to other people, but he'll do like the, like, I'll have a scene in bed by myself or something where I'm like talking on the phone and he'll like come out. Like, it just scared the living daylights out of me. Just pop up, and I'm having, like, a really quiet, emotional moment. Or, like, tickle the bottom of my feet. And I'm like, what? You know, like, so, yeah, those little ones.
Aaron Paul and I are connected. We are, there's a handful of us that are cut from the exact same white guy mold.
Right, yes! Oh, my gosh.
It's me, Aaron Paul, Charlie Day.
Yes, and oh, my God!
And then the lead singer of Muse.
Yes! That is crazy.
There was basically just like one
Play-Doh
mold
yeah,
all of us came out of.
That, the visual on that is like outstanding.
It's pretty fun, by yeah.
That is amazing.
If I said like these are my brothers or cousins, you'd be like, yeah, absolutely,
100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
It's time for our audience to ask some questions. Who has a question to get up and ask? Hello.
Hi.
What is your name?
Christopher.
I love that's a beautiful name.
Thank you.
What is your question?
So, what is your favorite on-set memory of The Path?
Oh gosh. Wow, that's a really good question. I would say one of the very first days working with Aaron, we had one of our very first really big emotional scenes, and it was a very vulnerable scene for both of us, and I think we were both very nervous going into it, and it turned out being a beautiful scene, and we're really proud of our work together, and I think it cemented our friendship, but also our creative relationship, so, yeah.
What is the most intimate kind of scene to do?
Well, I think even more over than sort of an actual intimate scene. I mean, those can be fine, but you know, Aaron and I have those quite a bit. But he's like my brother; it's fine. We just right. get it, and we usually. I was just going to say bang it out, and it's terrible. it's
yeah,
a terrible
and when you string that whole sentence together, he's like my brother. We just kind of bang it out. Small town in the Midwest, right?
This is terrible, terrible. No,
how small is this like town? Is everyone related? Everyone's related.
Like
okay, all right, listen.
It's
fine.
Like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But like the scenes that you see on the page that are written and, you know that it has to go kind of to a very vulnerable place and you're going to get emotional and you imagine in your mind what the scene is going to do, how you're going to play it, and then, you know, your scene partner, and typically Aaron will come in and just knock my socks off. And it's so inspiring as someone who's even been in the business for so long. You know, as an actor, you can't help but rehearse it yourself, and you imagine how the other person's going to play it. And I think I always have, like, a good sense of how the scene is going to play. But someone as talented as Aaron will come in and just elevate, obviously, what you've done in your own head.
Right.
And do something really special, and that, in turn, inspires your own performance. And it's just this beautiful, cyclical, creative, you know, harmonious relationship, and we have that a lot, and so I find that to be very lovely and intimate and vulnerable. And
excellent. I let's see. What do I want to give to? Oh, I feel like I might want to give this away. This is from this little nod to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
This is if you see the movie. I don't want to spoil it, but if you see the movie, this makes a lot of sense.
It does.
By the way, I just want to hold this up on camera. This is a finger. I just want to make sure that everyone knows that is a finger right there, because it's a finger. There you go. That's
awesome.
For you. Signed by
so
Michelle.
Awesome. Thank you, Kristen.
We have a video message. Let's take a look.
Hi, my name is Cecile, and I'm from Mifflinburg, Pennsylvania. And my question is, who do you think can be more dangerous and intimidating, Sarah Lane or Jesse Pinkman?
Ooh. Sarah Lane. I think Sarah Lane is more dangerous than Jesse Pinkman because she is very convicted, and I think that Jesse Pinkman has like a physical addiction that you can kind of sort of get over, but Sarah Lane has a real spiritual conviction, and she's very dogmatic, and I think that she is to a fault at times, so I think that she's potentially more dangerous.
Now, with the... I don't think Jesse Pinkman was really that dangerous at all, actually. Jesse was
kind of like a teddy bear,
he was a screw-up.
Right?
He was a complete screw-up and said the word bitch a lot. But to work on a show like this, does it resonate in any way in your real life? Like, do you understand anything about human behavior and cults and needing to believe in stuff?
You know what? I think, like, people... What's really interesting, actually, what I've loved what's come out of the show is that a lot of people come up and share their stories about people being involved in fringe movements or cults or what have you. And what it's made me realize is that, you know, people really have a natural impulse, a natural instinct to want to be with like-minded people that want to feel supportive and connected to people around them. And I think that, you know, when people are vulnerable and need help, you know, they can be vulnerable to be going into kind of fringe movements that can take advantage of them. Or they can be fortunate to be a part of a movement or a faith or religion that really does support them and help them, you know, and raise them to a higher place, a higher state of being. So it's been really interesting hearing people, you know, my character in particular, she's very stern, as I was saying, and very determined, and she uses tough love tactics quite a bit. And so that aspect of it, I kind of understand, you know, and not in this particular, you know, case she's using it in the wrong case, but I sort of justify a lot of things by using tough love.
Do you like the difference of, you know, because... Is there a particular movie that you feel like, oh, I got really attached to this character and it was really hard to say goodbye to her?
Yeah.
Versus when you're on a series, like, oh, okay, you know, we get to go back, we get to do this again. It just kind of draw it out more.
I would probably say a character I played in Trucker, Diane Ford, or the character that I played in Fort Bliss, which is an Army medic. You know, those were, and I spent a lot of time with real truckers. You know, I went on long hauls. I learned how to get my truck driving license. I got my Class A license.
And, really?
Yeah.
This does not surprise me at all. This does not surprise me at all that you can drive a truck too.
Yeah, I can. I let it go because the fines are huge if you get pulled over for doing anything.
Right.
If you got a Class A license. But those things, you know, those are really stories that were really passionate to me and characters that I loved. And so I miss those characters a lot. And just as, like, and with Sarah, it's what's great about this particular character being on the series is, you know, hopefully if we get picked up for a third season, I get to go back and kind of get into her skin again, which I'm excited about.
What did you learn from, because truckers, and I think most people take for granted, like you see a truck on the freeway, like, ah, damn truck got in my way.
Yeah.
These people.
You're usually getting in their way, trust me.
Yeah. And also, can you think of another profession where someone has to be so comfortable with being alone?
Yes.
And just, because have you guys ever driven cross country before? Have you driven across country?
Yes, yeah.
It always sounds like a great idea. And then you get 3 days in. And you're in a prison without walls. You're like, there's fucking corn in every direction for hundreds of miles.
Like
you're trapped.
Yeah.
Like, how do you...
It's a real livelihood. What I've come to know, and in female truckers in particular, you know, they endure a lot. You know, truck stops are not the safest of places. But there's a real culture, a truck driving culture, and these people are free spirits. They love to be on the road and drive for hours. And, you know, it's funny just being in the truck for a while and you hear all the different CB language, you know, all the different radio language. And there's like a whole glossary of terms that are really fun and funny. But it's beautiful. And what's kind of also interesting is that you sit up really high in the cab, you know, and you see the perspective of the world in a different way. And you also see, like, what a bunch of jackasses are on the road. You do. You're like, I can't believe he just cut you off. And one of the things that I remember, you know, every single trucker would tell me was that, you know, you see these people, they cut right in front of a truck, and it takes a trucker so far to slow down. Like, they will run you down because they just can't brake that fast, you know. So that's just like a word of advice, you know, just don't cut them off so close.
Don't cut off a trucker.
Don't cut off a trucker, yeah. Don't pull in so tight because they can't really slow down that quickly. But, yeah, it's a really fascinating world, and I loved it.
What do you do? Are you comfortable? I mean, I would imagine if since you have a couple kids, you're probably not alone. Alone very often.
Yeah, no.
But are you comfortable being alone?
Yes.
What do you do? Like if someone just sort of locked you and said, okay, we're gonna stick you in this cabin for a week.
What do you do?
That's
a really good question. I would like to say I would pick up a book and read, but I've kind of forgotten how to read. I feel like, you know, with a kid, I read children's books all the time, and then I read scripts and I prepare my work. So I would ideally like to pick up a book or a play and read that. But honestly, you'd probably find me shopping online for like vintage homewares and clothes and things like that. That's really what you would find me doing.
Gotcha.
With like a case of wine, because I'd be there for the whole week.
The whole week.
Wine and antique shopping. A week.
Yeah. We have someone else who's going to ask a question. Get on up here.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Michelle.
Hi.
How are you doing? I was wondering if there's any shows or movies that you totally geek out about.
Oh, yes. I geek out on Parts Unknown, Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, yeah.
I am a total foodie. I love adventure, and I love his spirit. Talk about somebody who's just will try and do anything.
Yeah.
I love that about him. And I just love the places, I love the places he goes and the different cultures that he explores. I really respect all those kind of qualities, and I just think he'd be a really good time to hang out with.
He is. I mean, he's been on the podcast before, and he's really great because the thing that's great about him is that he really does know how to live, and I think part of the reason he's so good at knowing how to live is because he almost died from heroin. He was addicted to heroin, and he, you know, cleaned himself up and got his life.
Wow.
And so it's really interesting. I feel like what's unspoken, and even with a great performance when you're watching, you know, it's all the stuff that's unspoken. I think you really do. You feel like, oh, this guy knows how to live. He has been through some shit, and he knows how to appreciate life.
Yeah, and he just doesn't take any gruff. He's like, well, you know, whatever. Another show that I just discovered that I love is this comedy called You're the Worst.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, how great is that show?
It's great.
It's so funny. That Halloween episode, did you see the
Halloween episode? I didn't see
the Halloween episode. It's seriously one of the funniest, like, comedic episodes of anything I've ever seen. The actors are so good. It's really well written. And what I love, it's only 22 minutes.
So you can just get through it in no time. You get through it in no
time. I'm like, I got 22 minutes before I fall asleep, and I really enjoy that show.
I never got your name.
Chris.
Oh, another one?
Wow.
What if on Talking with Chris Hardwick, I only allowed people named Chris?
That's what it should be.
Christoph, Christine.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay, I have a very special thing for you.
Oh, awesome.
Well, I'll just. This is from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, that is so funny.
I feel like that.
My biggest regret is not taking that Santa costume home.
You didn't take that home.
I didn't take it home. You know, I was so green that I had no idea that I could ask to keep these things. You know,
or just take them.
Or just take them, right? Yeah. But I sort of do regret it. I remember they had an amazing costume designer who built like this padded bra in it. I'm not very well endowed, but they were like, she's Harmony Faith Lane has got to have like breasts. And so they put breast pads in it every which direction. And so I ended up having this amazing cleavage every day. I would walk out every night and be like, wow, I didn't even know that was possible. And now I'm so regretful that I didn't keep it. I would have just cut the bra out of it and stuck it in any old thing and be wearing it all the time.
What do you learn? You've worked with so many amazing people.
Yeah.
Are you the type of person that sort of files away, like, okay, I learned this from this person,
kind of,
and this from that lady?
Yeah, kind of. You know, one of the interesting things, you do, because I never studied acting, so I started off kind of with a bang, and really every co-star I've had has taught me something. And you know, I remember, even just in terms of memorizing lines, Jake Gyllenhaal, for instance, we would always speed read our lines, you know, and so they were just like second nature to us. And I'd never done that before with an actor, but that's like something you kind of learn along the way. And he'd be like, faster, faster, you know. And then by the time, you know, and then you don't get tongue-tied and you're not taking breaths when you're not meant to. And it has like a real ease and a real flow. And I thought that was really something, like a tool that he shared with me that I've taken with me.
Is there anyone that you've ever been almost too nervous to be in the room with?
Let me think. The first time I think that I auditioned with Tom Cruise for Mission Impossible 3, I was so nervous. He was doing reshoots on War of the Worlds, and J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams and I go up to the sound stage, and we walk in, and it's really dark in this really cool, amazing set. And he's like, okay, Tom, you know, we're ready. And
he flies down
Tom's
on a
like,
jetpack.
Basically, it was like that. He came down like he was connected to something.
Yeah.
And he comes down and he comes over and introduces himself, and he was such a gentleman. And in that same moment, he's like, get over here. And he brings Steven Spielberg over. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here with like 10 pages just like shaking, you know. And by that time, I was like, I couldn't believe I just met Tom Cruise and Steven Spielberg in one moment, you know, and then we went into the audition and it went really well.
And J.J. Abrams, too,
and
like
J.
on top
Abrams.
Of that.
I know.
I mean, J.J., that was like just sort of the beginning of his. I mean,
it
he was doing a ton of television at that point, but
getting
over into film.
You know, and that was interesting working on that film. It was a big action film for me. And one of the things that J.J. kind of took kind of passed on to me, and he shared with Jennifer Garner all the time because they were doing Alias right. for so long, right? And he was like, you know, he's like, you want to look really fierce, right? And I was like, well, yeah. And he's like, make sure you keep your chin down and make your eyes, put your eyes up, you know? And, you know, it's so funny because I did that recently. I just saw like a clip from that scene where I had my chin down and my eyes up. And I was like, damn, I do look fierce. That worked. What a good piece of advice. You know, that's why you love a director.
Before we go to break, I want to let you guys know that the extended and uncut version of this chat is available as a podcast at Nerdist. You can also go to amc.com/talking for bonus clips and exclusive content and links to the podcast for every one of our episodes. More with Michelle Monaghan when we come back. We'll see you in a few minutes. We are talking with Michelle Monaghan and me, Chris Hardwick. Let's have another audience member hop up and ask a question so I can give another thing away. What is your name?
Hi, my name is Ashley, and I'm from Los Angeles.
Well, welcome. What's your question?
My question is, if you were given the chance to participate in the source code, would you, why or why not?
Ooh, gosh. Okay, so Source Code is a film that I did with Jake Gyllenhaal, as I was saying. And the premise of the movie is that you could go back and relive a certain part of your life. And I would participate in the Source Code, and I would go back and relive my wedding day because I made the worst mistake on our wedding day. And I didn't. We didn't video it. Or videotape or anything. And at the time, I thought, you know, oh, I don't want any of that. It's fine. I'll remember it on the day. But I regret it now because we have children. And I would love to have seen, you know, the looks on our children's faces watching, you know, mommy and daddy get married and see all of our friends and family.
Well, but at least they can always, your kids can always watch you make out with Tom Cruise on your honeymoon.
Oh, well, there you go.
So,
exactly.
So at least that was recorded.
Exactly.
Let's see, what do I have for you?
Yes.
Oh, you know, I'm going to give you this. This is actually almost one I almost kept. This is the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang script signed by Michelle Monaghan. And also, wait, and then a trucker hat, which
I love
we put.
That.
I did not do that well. I apologize. I did not sit that on there well. The pigtails make it difficult to. They should make a trucker cap with holes on both sides. Guys, billion-dollar idea. Why are we even still here? Let's here's a video question.
That's awesome.
Hi, Michelle. I'm Rachel from Syracuse, New York. And I was wondering if there was a certain person or event in your life that has really inspired you through your career.
Ooh. Gosh.
Is it right now?
Yeah. A certain person or a certain event. Gosh, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, I will say, you know, really, you know, I was working with Richard Gere many years ago in a film called Unfaithful.
Right.
And that was one of my very first experiences. And I just had a profoundly great experience with him. You know, he was preparing for a scene and he put on this really operatic music. It was beautiful. And I was sitting there and everybody was really quiet on set. And he's over in the corner and he's getting sort of worked up. And I'm thinking, what is going on? He is really upset over there. Somebody should go and check on him. That's what I'm thinking, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I see you go like this, and all of a sudden we roll camera and everybody gets in position, and he comes over and yell action, and he comes over and he is really like distraught and in an emotional mess, and we go through the scene, and I remember really sincerely feeling his energy and his pain, and it made me really emotional, and the camera was on him, so it was over the side, but I remember getting really worked up, and we did all of his work, and at some point, like, I had tears coming down, and, you know, it was really beautiful, his work, and I was really touched by it, and then after that scene, he came over to me and thanked me and gave me the thumbs up, and he said, thank you for that exchange, thank you for giving me that, and I didn't realize, I was like, oh, that's what acting is?
That's what this is all about.
That's what we're doing.
Got it.
And I remember I went, we shot by Bryant Park, and I went and I sat down on a bench in Bryant Park and I cried. And I cried out of gratitude because I realized this is what I'd meant. This is what I was meant to do. This is why I meant, I moved to New York, and I thought, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to do, because it was a really profound moment for me in my career.
I also have to thank you. I really have to thank Michelle in particular for coming on this show, because Michelle and I work out at the same gym.
Yeah.
And so we see each other a lot, and yeah. So we see, and there is kind of an intimacy, like when you see someone
sweating
and trying to pick shit up off the ground.
Right, and you're like, do I hug him?
Do I
shake
say
his
hi?
Hand?
I know I'm sweating. Yeah. And so I ran into Michelle at the gym, and I said, listen, I'm doing this show, and I feel bad. I always feel bad, like, trying to get people to do stuff.
No.
It's like, oh, please
don't worry. You're going to come over and clean my garage.
I will absolutely come over and clean your garage. So I ran into Michelle at the gym, and I was like, I'm doing a show. And you said yes, and you actually showed up.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate
of
that.
Course.
And I'm going to tell you something. This woman could kick the shit out of, I mean, I'm seeing, she'll have a whole workout and then just go on the treadmill and run for like an hour. But just really quickly, did you knock Jamie Foxx's tooth out in Sleepless?
Yes, I did. See? I did. I knocked his tooth out. And talk about strong. You know, I really trained hard for that and it was really exciting. I got to train with the stunt coordinator from the Bourne movie. So, like, you have the opportunity to do that. So you get to learn some badass shit. So I trained mixed martial arts 3 days a week, 3 hours a day. And I got in great shape, and we, you know, choreographed the scene, you know, where I have this really big fight scene in Sleepless. It's out now. You can go and get it. I insist you do now. And I was on top of him, and I don't know if I was, you know, quick on the draw or not, but I clocked him right in the kisser. I cracked my knuckle, or split my knuckle open. And I saw it. I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, I just, your tooth?
Oh.
He's like, keep going, keep going. And I was like, he's like, keep going. And so we finished the scene, and I just feel like this is one of the most embarrassing moments. I feel so awful. And then he's like, don't worry about it. We finish out the day. And then the next morning, I don't want to bring it up because I'm like so embarrassed. But I'm trying to, like, cop a look, right? I'm like, and all of a sudden I see, like, we're rehearsing. I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, how the hell did he get his tooth fixed? And lo and behold, we were shooting down in Atlanta, and his buddy, his best friend, happens to be a dentist in Atlanta, and he got it fixed overnight, like, at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning.
You gotta knock that shit out again.
I gotta knock that shit out again.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I did. And so, yeah,
at least
he's a real trooper.
At least he took it well.
He took it well. I mean, he took it well. He's so strong, Jamie. He's unbelievable.
So you had to feel a little cool that you knocked his tooth.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I did.
I mean, come on.
What can I say? It's still underneath my pillow.
So as we're sort of wrapping out the show, I've just been asking people for, like, people come on the show, just a piece of advice, a piece of wisdom, something that you carry around with you, or something that you want to share with people. Is there anything that helps drive you?
Yeah, well, this is great advice, actually. And Kevin Bacon, of all people, gave it to me. This too shall pass. And it's great advice because he gave it to me as a mom with my first child, and I just met him randomly when our daughter was like about 6 weeks old. She wasn't sleeping through the night, and it was really rough. And he said, just remember this too shall pass. And he said, you should really remember that in good times and in bad times, because one day, you know, she'll be sleeping through the night, and then she won't need you. She won't need you to nurse her, and then she won't need you to change her diaper, and then she won't need you, you know. So really understand that this too shall pass isn't just for, you know, the things that are kind of driving you nuts and you're going to get through them, but to really have gratitude and remember the things, to be in the moment.
That's spectacular. Because I've definitely only heard it used for the negative stuff. But to hear it used to apply to positive experiences
and
is really
so
great, too.
It's so amazing, you know. And I actually thanked him. I had the opportunity to work with him in Patriots Day last year. And I said to him a few months ago as we were promoting the movie, I said, I just wanted to say thank you for sharing those words of advice with me. I said, I've really taken them with me in my day-to-day, not just with my children, but my work. And he said, oh, my gosh, that's right. He's like, you know, when I gave that to you, my daughter was just in junior high, and now she's just gone off to college, and he's written her a song called This Too Shall Pass.
Aww, that's adorable.
How beautiful, right?
And Kevin Bacon.
I know. What a dreamboat, right?
Well, this was an amazing chat. Thank you so much for being here,
thank
Michelle
you.
Monahan.
This is great.
Absolutely adored having you here. Thank you so much to Michelle Monahan. Be sure to check out The Path. It's on Hulu. You have the internet, so you can just watch it right now after this. Always check out at Talk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to find out who's going to be on the show and how you can be a part of it. Thank you so much for watching. We couldn't do the show without you. I'm Chris Hardwick. At Hardwick on the tweets and Instagrams. Don't text and drive. All right, I'll see you soon. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.